I think. Oh, we start. Oh, well, it tells you that we're recording now. I see. I don't know if you know that, but it tells me. So now
Actually, it was supposed to count down, and I was the only one supposed to be able to see the countdown. I must have hit the wrong button on it. So
no countdown. I just saw
surprise. Surprise.
It is. But no, we tried that early on when we did our podcast. It was we did the podcast, and then we're like, you know, we would listen to it. I'm like, well, let's try this way. Let's redo the podcast and try and capture that same essence. And it just didn't work. So we're like, you know what? Fuck it. We'll just go live. Yeah. Fuck it. We'll go live.
Right. And so this is a PG-13 podcast. So we're gonna. It's not a PG-13 podcast. I want. If you're going to hell, I want you to go ahead and keep going. So it doesn't matter. All right. So I'm not sending you there. I'm not sending you there. Okay. I don't have the power. All right. Who we have with us today? We have Joe Cannon, criminal justice professional, actor extraordinaire, podcaster, singer, I suppose writer. And then we have Christy Cannon, which is a name that I have a hard time saying because I stutter when I say that first name. She is a professional makeup artist. She's also an actress, and she is a very, very, I would say, smart person for marrying Mr. Cannon. I'm going to leave it at that. She's a smart person for marrying Mr. Cannon. How's that? All right. So we got several things we're going to talk about today, so let's just go ahead and jump on in it. This is DPS on the record. I'm Dr. Paris Spencer, and we are live. And what's in the news, the top of the news right now, is one of our favorite female abusers, allegedly, right?
He hasn't been convicted of anything yet, so.
But he doesn't have a bond. Now, he offered a $50 million bond. He offered that to the court. And if I was the court, I was in the audience, I'd have said, I'll take it. I'd have took the $50 million. They said, no, you keep your money in jail. So how do you not get out on a $50 million bond? You must be a monster. I thought he was a pretty good, whatever he is. But anyway, let's
over on this situation will be far more worth than $50 million of revenue.
To 100%. Yeah.
Well, Cassie offered, you know, she said, give me, you know, I think it was $10 million she wanted. It might have been $30 million. I don't know what it was. He's like, he snubbed her. Now he's snubbing Pookie in his cell. So
She asked for what?
I think she asked for like $10 million.
To keep hush?
Like a couple years ago. And he's like, hell no.
So she was like, you give me $10 million and I'll be quiet?
Allegedly.
About the whole video?
Yeah, according to my source, which is a chimpanzee. So, it could be accurate or not. I'm referring to y'all's little series y'all just started watching.
That's crazy. First of all, I don't know who would want to do that to themselves. Unless you're just driven by money, which obviously, I mean, I guess when you get that high into the upper echelon of fame and fortune, you know, I mean, if you don't watch out, you get pretty greedy. But man, like, I mean,
you're talking about him or her.
Both of them, anybody really, but I'm saying, like, if she's saying after what he put her through on the video that we saw, and she still wouldn't be like, look, just give me $10 million, I ain't gonna say nothing. Like, was there worse shit that they did that happened to her? You know, maybe that wasn't so bad.
Well, I think it's kind of relative because $10 million to him may be like $1,000 to us,
or $100. I mean, it's nothing.
So she's like. She was kind of low. I thought it was high because I didn't know how much money he had till now, posting a $50 million bond. But, you know, $10 million and I'll just shut up and go away. But sometimes arrogance comes with money.
Yeah.
And he said no. So now he may be, and Cassie's a very beautiful, beautiful lady. I'm sure she looks better than Pookie that's in the cell with him. And he probably should have said, Yes, but what he did, right? What he did.
Yeah.
He knocks her down, he kicks her, drags her down the hall.
Right. Screaming at her.
Just, but there are guys that do that. They don't have to pay $10 million or $50 million, though. This happens every day, though.
What? Am I right? What did she say to him?
No, I'm kidding. Well, supposedly they were having one of those freak off things, allegedly. And she got a hold of his phone. And of course, he found another woman in it, and he left with his phone. And so he's chasing her because she had his phone.
Right.
First of all, it's P. Diddy. You know he's talking to multiple other women.
Especially the young ones.
And second of all, I honestly think my theory would be, if you want all this to go away for $10 million, she might have been thinking it's going to be national news. My family is going to know what happened to me. It might have been worth it. Like, that amount of money will just make this get out of my life and not drag my name through all this.
And it can't be the first time, right?
Oh, absolutely not. That shows a pattern of anger, like the absolute anger.
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
I don't think it was just what happened then. I think it was over a period of time, the abuse that she suffered as a result, being forced to participate in these things, right? Yep. So,
I was trying to find what you were talking about. Can you explain what freakouts are? Because I'm still not quite sure. Is it just like a sex party? Is that what that is?
Well, I haven't been in any, unless they were called something else. If it's being by yourself, then I've been on a bunch of freakouts. But anyway, so I'm thinking that a freakout is a party. Bring prostitutes in, maybe male and female, and you're kind of, you know, forced to be in actions with them with some illicit drugs involved as well. So just wild sex and craziness to the pleasure of weirdos and perverts.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. That's my thinking.
Yeah, kind of like what Freddie Mercury used to have back in the day at his mansion.
I mean, I used to do that all the time.
Well, Freddie Mercury's was a little different.
Though. It'll grab onto your soul, take you down. You gotta really be careful.
Well, and let's be honest now. P. Diddy has been accused of having some other weird things going on too. Now it's not just, you know.
Well, I know.
There's some other accusers now.
Human trafficking. There are other accusers. Okay, well, that makes sense.
Of the male persuasion.
Okay. Yeah. Right. Kevin Hart. Right. There's that.
I'm not gonna throw Kevin Hart in this. He's doing okay right now. He hasn't had any freakouts.
Having a good time together, freaking out together. Right.
I don't know. That looks nasty to me.
I mean, it looks nasty to you, but it might be fresh as fuck and fly to them.
Well, I'm gonna go ahead and take some alcohol sauce on that one.
I don't appreciate this lighting. I keep looking at myself, and I don't appreciate this lighting.
Okay.
Let's work on the looking at yourself part first. Okay, that's the issue.
Always looking at myself.
That's the issue. It's called narcissistic personality disorder.
Yes. I'm more histrionic, I think, than anything else.
You're the only person that I know that has an office with a mirror facing his desk. So, yeah. He looks at himself all day. I heard. Anyway, I don't even know where he works. Okay.
I know nothing about what... I mean, I know the stories he tells me at work, and I've heard stories from coworkers. I know nothing about who he is at work, so I love learning these little tidbits.
Well, that part wasn't true, but I'm pretty sure what everybody else has told you is. All right. So,
do you mind if I smoke on your podcast? Can I smoke in here?
This is a no smoking zone, as long as you know secondhand smoke can kill the host. Okay, all right. So let's talk about something that you two are taking on as a short term hobby, which is this little chimpanzee little show y'all are watching. What is that about?
Oh, It's wild. Okay, so Chimp Crazy. It's made by the guys, Eric O'Donnell. I can't remember his name,
Tiger
but
King guy.
But he's the guy that made the Tiger King Netflix documentary.
Ah, okay, and, yeah.
So it's the same style. You know, it's like that guerrilla documentary filming type style. Wild, absolutely wild about these. It's about these chimps that were in captivity in they raised them from they created this wildlife refuge for chimpanzees, and it was like they were just like pushing out chimpanzee babies. It was it was like a puppy mill, but for chimpanzees.
Were they
just
selling
wild.
Them?
Huh?
Were they selling them?
Yeah, they were selling them. They were also selling them to Hollywood. Okay. We learned in the first episode, we haven't only seen the first episode, but from what they were saying on the thing, like all the chimpanzees from the 90s on the movies and TV shows, they all came from this chimpanzee mill.
If you see a Hallmark card that has a chimp on it, it's like, 9 times out of 10, it's going to come from this
it's
sanctuary.
From them. And so,
I see.
And then, like the husband, had gone to like one of the cages, and the chimp just bit his whole nose off. So at one point he's like super handsome kind of guy, and then all of a sudden it shows him and he's on TV and he's, you know, he's all jacked up because his nose had been bitten off, and then he died shortly after from natural causes. So they think that maybe the chimps killed him. But really the story is, I think, going to take a turn when it comes to the next couple episodes, because at the end of the first episode, the FBI or the FBI, the U.S. Marshal Service, and PETA come in and they take all the chimpanzees and take them to a wildlife refuge, like a really good one.
But one was missing.
That's
one
right.
And so was the freaky lady that worked there volunteer style, and she lived in a trailer, and she looks like if Tammy Faye Baker didn't have any money but still had all the plastic surgery
and was trying to look like Dolly Parton.
Right.
So the one chimpanzee ended up being the most famous one, correct?
Yeah.
Everybody wanted this chimp, right?
Correct. And it's really
sad.
A very messed up love story that this woman has with these chimps.
Wild.
She sees them as her babies, and she like deludes herself that everything that she's doing is for of these chimps. And I had a very hard time watching it. If there's one thing I can't say, it's animal cruelty.
Yeah.
And it was heartbreaking for me, but yeah, it's very riveting in a horrifying way.
Can't wait for tonight when we watch the second episode.
Well, you're going to have to go on that.
I've already spoiled a little bit of it, but I did watch it. It is weird to be in solitude with a chimp, and that's your entire life. It's weird. It's not a normal pet, but it's cruel because you're not really in solitude with him because he's caged. So you don't trust the chimp enough to be outside of the cage with you, but you want to keep the chimp.
First thing I said when I heard that, when I saw that, I was like, yeah, she loves him, but they're in a cage. Like,
yeah. It's still a fear there. And so the chimp is smarter than she is because it knows that, you know, this bitch is keeping me in here. If I get out of this mug, I'm going to kill her. And I guess she knew that. That's why he was caged up. So I think I'm not going to spoil it for you. I'm going to leave it at that. I'm not going to tell you what happened next. What happened at the end.
I already know what Tonka did once she released, got him out. But still, like, I still want to see the... I'm not into documentaries much. Like, I don't...
I am.
She is. I'm not. And
I like animals. So I like the big cats. And then I like this. I like this kind of story about this, about the smart, you know, chimpanzees. Some people think that some of y'all came from chimpanzees. I know I didn't come from a chimpanzee. I came from my mom. So anyway, moving forward, talk about. Go ahead. Yes, sir.
Well, I'm just. They are what 90, almost 99% exact from us, right? There's
I see a whole lot of percentage that they're not exact.
So have you ever heard of the stoned ape theory? No. Okay. Face. So
that's the face I make every day when it tells me some new theory that's out there.
I think it was Terrence McKenna.
I've heard of the story, and whoever wants to be an ancestor or a descendant of apes.
So what they think
my thing is where is the person in transition? Where's the half monkey ape man? Some of these apes have to be in transition to human, right? It makes no sense. So there's no transition. There's a clear line between. I get it. I understand people want to be mixed up with some apes.
Let me explain real quick. The stoned ape theory is that over a couple hundred thousand years or something, these apes, these chimpanzees, they were eating psychedelic mushrooms, and they didn't know what they were eating. And after however many thousands of years, they started to. That's how they developed their own language. That's how they just started developing language and actually seeing more beyond themselves. Like all of most animals do in the animal kingdom. No, there's no animal in the animal kingdom looks up at the stars except for us, right? No one ponders.
And there's somebody that's 100,000 years old that told somebody this shit, right?
So, no, I'm just
it's kind of like somebody 400 years ago that was a slave, somebody today had suffered. I ain't seen no 400-year-old black people, but anyway.
It's a theory, just like gravity. Gravity is a theory.
Gravity's not a theory, it's what it is.
What do they call it? The theory of gravity.
It calls it holding our asses to the earth so we don't float out and just go away somewhere.
Some people think that gravity doesn't exist and it's just a matter of weight and displacement.
I don't feel like I'm being pulled as much as I'm being pushed. People think that way, you know?
Anyway.
That's the definition of conflict. Okay. So let's transition to... everybody's favorite, and that is politics.
Okay. Oh, here we go. You were getting into, so you're prepared for whatever he's going to say.
Okay.
Politics.
Yeah. So let's start with the obvious. Well, let's start with the most recent, and that is the assassination attempts. Now, there's conspiracies out there that says the Secret Service is plotting to kill or plotting not to protect Donald Trump. And that's why these events in which we've had two individuals that tried to take the life of a former president of the United States. The assertion is that the Secret Service and the locals allowed an individual on the property that was within shooting range, real close shooting range of Donald Trump, which multiple people informed them of this individual. And they did not shoot this individual until the individual fired first. My take is that they didn't know whether the individual was a law enforcement officer, Secret Service, and they were confused about who he was. But when he took the shot is when they took him out, and that's when they knew. But I'm sure Mr. Cannon has a fantastic angle on this, so let's go.
We're talking about the second attempt, right?
No, the first.
The first, okay.
Both attempts.
So, okay, first of all, I don't know how anyone could mistake that child, that kid, the young man, I guess he's not a kid, he's a young man, as a law enforcement officer. Nothing about him has said anything about law enforcement.
Well, the picture they showed of him was not how he was dressed that day. So he was in full garb. So yeah, it could be easily mistaken. Apparently something happened, but go ahead.
Well, okay. So there's a couple of different things on this guy. So it's, first of all, they saw him 3 hours before, and he was walking around with a rangefinder. Now, right there, if you're Secret Service or if you're in law enforcement or something like that, or in security of any kind, and you see somebody with a rangefinder, you know that there's only one reason why you have a rangefinder.
To seek out range, but it could have been law enforcement doing the same. Could somebody be 300 yards away? Could be 500 yards away?
But the people who saw him right away,
they were smarter than the cops. So
they were like, "Hey guys, there's somebody over here." And then he gets on the roof. Like, there's somebody on the roof. But even before that part, they had questioned him. They had talked to him. So they knew he wasn't law enforcement. Because the law enforcement had already questioned him. They'd already talked to him, right? So why did they let him go? Now the local law enforcement, originally they weren't talking about it until the Secret Service came out and tried to throw the local law enforcement under the bus. Like, hey, no, this was local law enforcement. We told them to cover that area, and it should have been on them. And they're like, no, wait, hold on. But I think you're onto something when you said that with the conspiracy of, I don't think that they're trying to kill Donald Trump as far as the Secret Service is concerned. But I do think that the lack of care was there.
You think they're trying not to protect him?
I think that they just didn't care to protect him. I don't think that they were trying not to. I just think they didn't care to.
The same thing.
The director of the Secret Service was an outspoken anti-Trump, hated Trump. Talked about it all the time with her Secret Service.
But she wasn't. Employee. She wasn't there.
And she wasn't there. You're absolutely right. But again, if you are spitting rhetoric and spewing rhetoric constantly about something that's against what you are or what you agree in, and you have your subordinates there and you're hearing it from them all the time, and they go, hey, like, we're doing this. And she's like, well, just go ahead and give this much and not that much.
It couldn't have been that they were just completely incompetent.
It could have been complete incompetence. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. 100%. But again,
or could have been that oh, nothing ever happens, nothing ever goes wrong, we're not worried about it, these are all his people, right? Nothing's gonna happen to him,
right? Exactly. I mean I do agree with that.
I have a very unpopular theory.
Yeah,
I think, first of all, anytime you have human beings involved in anything, there is a wide margin of error because we're human beings. And second of all, and I'm not saying this to be anti-feminist, anti-whatever, but there is something that happens when you are more focused on hiring people to fulfill a quota than you are to hire people who are best qualified to protect and do the job. Mm. If you're more concerned about, well, how many women do we have protecting him? What's the ratio of this kind of people protecting him? Then it's like, no, this is a former president. I don't care if you hate him and think he's a scumbag. The man was still a president of our country. He deserves to be protected. And nobody deserves to, nobody does, whether you're on the left or the right. So I think that this was complete incompetence because you guys deal with this. I deal with it at work. You deal with it at work. It starts with the training from the top down. Is the expectation?
Right.
What is the training? How often are they being trained? Are they really ready to take a bullet for somebody? Or are you just hiring them because I got to get my 20% of women on the roster? I am all.
Well, it used to be willing to take a bullet.
Huh?
They used to be willing to take a bullet. I mean, that's how with Ronald Reagan. I mean, they was willing to jump in front and take a bullet, but you don't have somebody that's 5'3" standing in front of a 6'2" man. And so it's like he still can get, and then you stand them up. Okay, they didn't get a good shot enough, so you're gonna stand them up for the next shot. So if it's incompetence, it's gross incompetence.
Yeah, 100%.
But it's gross because it wasn't just not shot. Right. They didn't get the guy. They didn't get him when he was on the roof, but there was a second shooter, he'd be dead. Because they stood him up, he posted up, and they could have just shot him. You never should have seen him again once he went down. Well, never should have seen him again.
You've seen former presidents, just like you said, that have taller people surrounding them. So yes, if you have a very competent woman that's 5'3", she's at the car or she's somewhere else doing her job, but you've always seen presidents surrounded by people that are human targets in front of someone to protect them.
And they're not going to let him back up. Once he went down, the public should have never seen him again. He does not have any power and control. The Secret Service does. No, you're staying down, and he's lateral, and that's how he gets out of there, lateral. But they stood him, let him stand up, let him put his fist up. He could have got his hand shot off. All right, what about the second attempt? So you got a guy that's walking to the golf course and happens to spot a barrel of a gun through a fence hole, and that's the level of protection, right? Somebody's eyesight to spot a barrel. It could have been a weenie in the fence hole peeing, okay? But he spotted a barrel. It's weird. That's how you defend the president, right? Through somebody's natural eyesight. of that entire, how small that was is dependent on someone's eyesight.
Like I said, kind of, you got one job, right? So maybe they were more heightened. Maybe they had better security.
We can't even see a big ass car coming our way before it hits us, okay? But this guy's supposed to see a barrel through a fence hole, and that's the level of protection.
Maybe he has
that's the sophistication. That's the sophistication of Secret Service. They should have swept that 500 yards and beyond.
Yeah.
Through the woods, through the bushes, as far as it was, if they were walking ahead. But you're going to have, what if he didn't see the barrel?
So then why didn't it happen?
What if he didn't see the barrel?
So, you know, if they didn't do a sweep, why didn't they do a sweep? Or if they did do a sweep, how did that person get in after the sweep? And then we don't know if he was using binoculars or if he was just using his own two eyes. But the guy did get shots off. It wasn't like...
No, listen, there was no binoculars. He saw him with his plain eyes. He saw the barrel of the gun through the fence with his plain eyes. And I'm sorry, you're not protecting me like that. I mean, that's very, very risky.
It is. And so
no one's going to see it. My point is no one's going to see that.
Here's this conspiracy, right? Is that the first time? They was gross incompetence. Sounds to me like it was the same thing. Could have been.
First time the person missed, and the second time they're going to get him. Oh. See, the guy. I don't think either one of them was supposed to live through it.
Right. That's like I don't understand that. There was already one assassination attempt. He's still in the election. How are you not taking 1,800 additional steps anytime that man is public? I mean, that's you should be doing more, not. Doing less.
It shouldn't be just two of you.
Right.
You're right. I mean, that's as far as you're going to protect him. It wasn't 500 yards.
Why didn't he demand more?
Who demand more?
Why didn't Trump demand, like, he only saw a couple of Secret Services? Like, why don't I have more people here?
It's not his place. It's not his place or his call to demand.
Not his place. He's the one that they're protecting. I would be like,
I understand that. That should have been provided for him. He's not a consultant. He's not an expert. It's not his place.
Literally, we had just two assassination attempts, but the main one where he almost got killed, the first one, it just happened, however many weeks ago, and it's like it didn't even happen. Nobody's even talking about it.
Well, the second one, he would have been killed.
Yeah.
He would have been killed on this one.
It's wild.
So we'll come back to that in a second. So let's talk about Miss Kamala Harris. Okay. So there's been this discussion or here discussion on her pitch in her voices, her changes in pitch, changes in tones, or even changes in the way that she is talking to certain audiences. Mr. Cannon, what is your thoughts about that? Do you take issue with her having a different voice or appearing to have a different voice?
No, it's a clown show. In my opinion, it's all a big fucking clown show. So it's very, very reminiscent of 2016, when Hillary Clinton, remember Hillary Clinton going around and she would go to certain southern states. She'd be like, and I'll donate the burner furnace, ain't it? All that bullshit that she used to do. And she talked about how she loves hot sauce and she loves Tabasco. And, you know, when she was on like black podcasts and stuff with talking to black people, and it's like, but when she talks other like to everybody else, she talks like a rich white woman from DC, which I know she's from Little Rock. I get it, but she had never talked that way before. So all of a sudden,
have you ever been accused of changing the way you talk based on who you're talking to, Mr. Cannon?
Hell no.
No, I don't believe that.
Why?
I don't believe that.
What do you mean? What don't you believe? That I've never been accused of changing my voice to talk to somebody?
That you have not changed your voice based on who you're talking to?
No. I've changed my style of talking, but I've never take.
Well, I believe that's kind of the same thing. So no. You've never, if you're talking to somebody that's super country, or if you got some friends that are super country, I've been accused of that.
I do that. I pick up accents. I pick up inflections with different people, especially because I am from, we'll have to talk about this. I lived for a few years in Springfield, Ohio. So when I talk to my relatives in Ohio, I start saying Ohio. I start saying file, aisle, like it comes out. It comes out. But for me, it does. I tend to mimic people around me. I don't know. I mean, I haven't watched a lot of her footage, to be honest.
No, I've never been accused. I don't do that. I would never do that.
You may not be able to do that because you're a descendant of, and chimpanzees don't change their, you know, their voice tone. So, but most people do change their voice tone. Even people have been known to stutter when talking to someone who actually stutters. And so it's almost a natural thing. And it's also a way that people try to relate.
If you've got a prepared speech and you know what you're going to say, and you say the exact same speech in two different states and two different cities, but you change your accent based on who? The demographic. If that's not the most racist shit you've ever heard, I don't know what
it is. Oh my goodness. Is that racist?
I mean, maybe she's taking adapting her speech for her audience a little too far. Maybe that's what it is. Like, she's like, because you want to relate to your people, to your constituents. Like, you know, hi, y'all, how you doing?
You
like,
better call a union member. You better call and thank a union member. You better. She sounds like.
Mr. Cannon claimed that you do not change your speech, your tone of speech, based on who you're talking with. In fact, You do it with every audience you do at work. You also do it when you're around your Italian family. You change the way you talk. I don't have to be there to know that. Yes, you do. Your wife would know that. You become more Italian. Don't give me that shit.
Not Italian. I'm Sicilian.
Well, you become more Sicilian then, damn it.
Well, no.
He's always just loud. So there's not really a change around family, but I can.
Well, isn't being loud a change?
It's not the same.
No.
It's not the same because it's you.
All right. So, okay.
Is that the biggest thing? I mean, she does have one foot bigger than the other one. Isn't that more important?
No, it's not the same thing. It's 100% not the same thing. Changing your dynamic of speech does not mean changing your dialect.
So you see it as trickery. You see it as.
It's placating to the masses of your people. And I get it. Like, that's what they want to do. And that's
is that any different than playing to the heartbeat of your base, like we see other politicians do?
No.
It's part of the game, is it not? But it's not. It's a very mild part of the game. If that's the biggest thing. Okay. Let's compare that to. You like this issue. Let's compare that to eating dogs and cats. Let's see how much vitriol you have for that compared to someone's speech.
All right. Can I please
speak on this? If you want to talk about racist, go ahead. Let's hear it now.
I lived in that town when I was young and spent time with my mom in Springfield, Ohio. My mom and my grandmother are buried in Springfield, Ohio at Rose Hill Cemetery. And I can tell you right now, what the dog and cat thing, absolutely 100% racist. Because the story was proven to be false. Mm. However, no, hold on. You gotta listen.
I'm listening. You're
emoting. But here's the thing. The concern is, this is the facts. That town has 58,000 people. And in the past couple of years, through the Biden administration, again, I don't care who's president, this is just the facts. Through the past couple of years, they have seen an influx of 20,000 migrants from Haiti. They're not concerned about dogs and cats. They're concerned about the fact that when they walk into a business now, that they don't feel welcome. They feel that they can't even, that they don't like the language there. They have their own language and stuff, and that's fine. They feel overrun by this new population in their city. It's not that their patients are coming to our doorstep, stealing our dogs and cats. They're concerned about, we have a town that's almost doubled in population, and now we don't feel like we even can live here anymore because we don't feel welcome. So, and these people are there on the government dime. Springfield is not a rich city. It is very poor. They have 5 liquor stores and 2 grocery stores the last time that I was there. You know, it's, these are there. And of course, Ohio is a big red state. They voted overwhelmingly for Trump, and they will continue to do that. Their concern is all especially these migrants now being in their town with government subsidies, and they're still trying to find work. They're in the Miami Valley, one of the hardest places in the country to get work as a trucker. And there's a lot going on there from an economic standpoint, not from I'm coming to your porch to steal your dogs and your cats.
And right. So
that's still out there. Right. They're not concerned about dogs and cats. They're concerned about, am I going to be able to walk down the street?
Right. And the truth is, any small town would be heavily impacted by a 30% influx of individuals there anyway. Now, even though there were jobs in which other people wouldn't work, it wasn't that many jobs, okay? So the overwhelming amount of people who came,
there's 3,000 people. And
okay, well, hold on.
1,500 people from a different country show up.
All I'm saying is that in any small town, an influx of migrants or immigrants, okay, yes, would disrupt that town. And yes, the fact that people may not understand this culture that's come in and how fast it's come in, that it could be frightening for some people. Change is hard. That it's an impact on the infrastructure financially, just period. It's just, there is a, and you're not talking about a group of people that are of mixed cultures. You're talking about one big culture coming in and impacting another culture that's been withstanding for centuries. Okay. Mm-hmm. That is perfectly understood.
That's Montana. That's already slowly happening the great influx of people moving up here. Yellowstone has changed it. Everybody wants to come up to the big sky country and see what it's all about. We see all the tourism. There are so many buses that in Glacier, like this is just what I've seen. Like a lot of Asians come here now to see Montana because it's a natural wonder. It's gorgeous. But yes, when they come up here to live, if you had 2,500 or 2,000 more people, migrants come up to Shelby, it would absolutely change the culture of the town. Not negatively, but there are those inherent beliefs of people who have been up here that's going to freak them out. I mean, hell.
Well, I know it. I know it would, because only one person came up, and that was me, and it changed the whole damn town. But so listen,
you're not.
Listen. So I think the issue is this: people don't know what to say, and that's why the community did not talk about the cultural change that was going on, because that would automatically appear to be racist, right? Mm-hmm. So they did not. So they just kind of was quiet about it, right?
Right.
But come on, Cammie.
There's a question though.
Eating of dogs and cats. It's not just only racist. It's inhumane. And let's say that in Haiti, that was a delicacy. Okay. No one has spoke to that. No one says, well, this is what these people do in their own country. No one has said that. And so, but to create this thing where you vilify people and perhaps make it even more dangerous for the people who are already there by pissing these people off and push them into a corner where they're also in fear. That's my issue.
Sure, exactly.
And I think it is race baiting for votes.
Yeah.
How many people would freak out if it was 20,000 Swedish people that went to Springfield as opposed to 20,000 Haitians?
No, it depends.
That's a very good
question. I don't want their meatballs. Well, I hate Swedish.
I mean,
meatballs.
That's an absolute fact. What's especially in Ohio, if it was 20,000 white people that came up there, would there be as much fear? People fear.
There would not be. There'd be a lot more understanding. However, it still would be an impact on the infrastructure. It'd be an impact on jobs.
And So you
and that town cannot handle that many people. We know that, especially without the proper resources to absorb that. Right? You shouldn't have sent, maybe you should have sent 5,000 instead of sent the other 15 back somewhere else or left them there. But the fact that you sent 20 to a small town like that of a totally different culture, we don't know 100% about the Haitian culture. Even if somebody tried to tell you this is what it is, unless you've been over there, you really don't know. And maybe they eat live roosters. I don't know what they eat. I don't know what they eat, but there's not a lot of cats and dogs missing, and no one's seen them eat them. And it's weird.
I don't know.
It's weird.
Yeah. So, the only thing I know about Haitians or Haiti, and it's very, very little, was something about the Clinton Foundation and Hillary and Bill Clinton were supposed to go and help the Haitian people, and they had all this money that supposedly went to Haiti, and then they went to Haiti and they were like, where's all this money? And they're like, we haven't seen the money. We don't know what you're talking about. It's the only thing I know about the Haiti thing.
Well, I think that with some of the things that are being talked about and both sides blaming each other, I think that if you're getting shot at, you do need to tone down your rhetoric. You are going to piss some people off. Okay. Something as simple as not answering whether Ukraine should win or not. Okay. Then you have somebody that's been over to Ukraine who's crazy as shit, who thinks their president, or soon to be the guy that might be president, is going to abandon this guy's second country per se. And so now you've infuriated people. You have to be careful. And the rhetoric is not the same. There is some. See, my thing is that there are two things that bother me about this country and about people. There's two. One is the inability to apologize. Some people have a very, very difficult time apologizing. It's almost impossible for them to apologize, and they won't. And the other is lying. Those two things bother me more than anything else on this planet. Is the inability to say, I'm sorry. And saying you're sorry and then hitting her upside the head again, it doesn't mean you're sorry. I mean, an apology is supposed to be real. And lying is something I believe is vicious, and it's unnecessary. So those two things bother me.
Every day with the media, it happens every day with the politicians. It doesn't matter what side of the aisle you're on. All they do is lie, lie, lie. It happens every day with people. I mean, where we work, you know, it's people are lying to me all the time. But it's interesting you talk about.
A matter of what about
rhetoric. So let's talk about rhetoric for a minute. Okay. Yeah, I agree. Like sometimes I just want to like, shut up, Trump, shut up, just shut your mouth. Stop tweeting. You know, it's like
a horse loose in a hospital.
Oh, right. There he is. John Mulaney talks.
Here's the thing. Do you hear, name me the politicians that talk about women like they're dogs. See, I got a problem with that, because if all men did that, we would be in this country would be just destroyed.
Talk about women like they're dogs.
Yeah, they talk about that. Yeah, that women are just treated and talked to like dogs. Donald Trump talks about women like it ain't shit. And that bothers me a lot. And it really does. Matter of fact.
To this as a woman,
anyone.
Like real biological, I've had a child woman.
Okay.
I absolutely agree that the way he talks about women, you're talking about the whole grab them by the pussy thing, and yes, they see women as expendable.
Not only that, the attacks like on from Fox News, I think it's vicious that your go-to is always vicious when there's more intelligent words to say. We can all speak ignorant.
Of course. No, I'm not giving credence. I don't know if it's that, but my thing is there is something happening right now in the world where women are literally being treated like dogs. And do you know what's going on right now in Afghanistan? Like how women are now being forced to go back to draconian law and they have to be covered. They cannot look at any man that's not their husband.
It's been that way.
No, I know, but they relaxed it. And then after we pulled out of Afghanistan, the Taliban has taken.
The Taliban, yes, yes, immediately, yes. It got worse.
And they shout from the rooftops, women's rights, and we're supposed to be the greatest country in the world. Why are we ignoring this? Why are we ignoring the fact that women in Afghanistan are not even allowed? They're just there to have babies and obey their husbands. So.
Well, I think that we need, to worry about what's going on in the United States of America, and we need to stay out of other people's business. And if that's, I think if you don't like what your country's doing to you, then rise up against it. So if the people in Afghanistan don't like the way they're being treated, the people in Russia don't like the way they're treated, it's not us to go in and to free everybody and spend this enormous amount of money, equipment on everybody.
It's very hard for a woman to make that sacrifice and speak out against their government in Afghanistan when they are dragged out in the street and shot in front of people. Women, children have seen women shot in the street for having the audacity.
Have you seen the Scoops app?
That's almost every
kid's phone is called Scoops, S-C-O-O-P-Z.
No.
If you look at that app, you're going to see women get shot in the face. Men getting shot in the face, boys and girls getting shot in the face, right here in this country, every single day. And lots.
Why would anyone have an app on their kid's phone that does that?
Because there's no parental prevention for that. I mean, yours don't have one because they're only two.
Well, I have adult children, but they didn't have anything like that on their phones.
Well, this has come out over the last year and a half.
So I think we're missing the point here. Like I get it, you know, but if you want to talk about rhetoric, you say something enough over and over and over again, people are going to start to believe it, especially those who don't do their own research. And then those who never did their own research in the first place were being told in 2020 and 2021, don't do your own research in regards to COVID. Just follow the signs, listen to the experts. Who are the fucking experts, right? And so, and all the shit that come out during that time, it's all bullshit. And we know that now, as far as the vaccine, as far as how many people were dying, who was dying, all that stuff. But my point about rhetoric is if you say something enough, like this person is the end of democracy, this person is a Nazi, all Republicans are Nazis, every conservative is a Nazi, and we should get in their faces. We should yell and scream in their faces. We should interrupt them when they're eating their food. We should stand up because they're Nazis and they're all gonna be the end of democracy as we know it. You say that enough to kids, young men and women who you see you're laughing, but these are all like direct quotes from politicians about other politicians. And you say it over and over again, and you have a media complex, an arm of your party who does nothing but repeat that. People are gonna start listening to it. And you and I,
who exactly are you describing?
What's that?
What party are you describing?
What party am I describing?
Yes.
What
party are you describing when you're saying?
On which part? On which side? Because how many times have we heard?
Do it.
Yeah, I mean, they. It. But do they?
Yeah.
Stable.
Yeah, do they?
They
both have rhetoric, but which? But the Democrat Party has their media arm. You can't tell me they don't. They do.
Cannon.
What?
Cannon, you're drinking the Kool-Aid, bro. Okay, if we're going to compare, we can go ahead and say it's 50-50. I don't think it is, honestly. But you can never say, no, there's no way you can ever say, well, the Democrats do this more than Republicans. The Republicans have been drinking Donald Trump's sperm for the last 10 years. No matter, he has interrupted them. He has turned them all into zombies. They just follow along and do what he says. That's how it's been. It's obvious, and it's sad to me because there were some good Republicans. I mean, they're just zombies now. And so if you want to say the Democrats are saying this and repeating this, it's so sad because all you ever hear.
How many Republicans have you heard say that Kamala is the end of democracy and she's a Nazi and all the Democrats are Nazis? I just
JD, hold on, JD Vance.
I watch it all the time.
You asked me a question. I'm answering you, J.D. Vance.
J.D. Vance? What did he say?
He said that Donald Trump is a Nazi. He's worse than Hitler. Thank you. Cool.
There you go. He was a never Trumper.
His own running mate said that?
I'm just saying.
I don't know. I haven't heard that. I'll have to look that up. But that's still horrible.
He has said that.
He's saying
Republicans, bro. If you're gonna say you're in the middle, like you say you are, then you can drink some of the Kool-Aid from the other side. You have to be in the middle.
I watch recordings of news of like Maxine Waters, Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer, John Podesta, Kamala Harris.
You don't have a problem with January 6th, do you? You don't have a problem with that, do you?
No, I don't.
You don't have a problem with that, do you?
I think it was overblown.
There it is.
I think it was overblown.
Oh my God.
I don't care what. No, January 6th was unacceptable. I don't care who the hell is in office.
Okay, so.
I know that we've talked about this, honey. I know the footage that came out, all the things that you're talking about. I'm seen as a whole. That was horrifying to watch that happen to your country, that people are storming the Capitol. Mm. That's horrifying.
What happened a few months ago?
And they were talking about, and they were coming after Republicans, bro. They were coming after Mike Pence. Okay? So it was bad. It was terrible. And here's the thing. It really doesn't matter because somehow Donald Trump got back in as a nominee. Out of 360 million people, 240 million that can actually vote, they could not find a single person with better character, with more stability, with less hate than the man. That's why I asked you before, are you a better man than he is? Is your brother, is your father? Do you know anybody else that's better than he is? And if you do, then we have a person that's better in office than he is. Is your wife better than he is? We got to be honest about that. You heard me say that Joe Biden had to go, but you also heard me say they both had to. We don't need people from the senior citizens home sitting in the president's office.
I didn't vote for Trump in 2020. I don't care.
What he did, what happened on that day was probably one of the scariest things in a country like ours. That the tyranny that happens in all these countries, these coups that happen, the overthrowing of government, what would have happened if they would have killed somebody? They still wouldn't have got away with the rest of the country wouldn't have went along with it. That's how ignorant it was. And the reason why people run away from it, because they think it's their whole party. It's not their whole party. It's everyone who went there that day and everyone who encouraged them to go there. It's not everyone. It's just the ones who encouraged and the ones that were there. Yeah. You can't just say, I hate this as a party, then you're complicit in it. You have to isolate or you're a part of. That's the way I think.
I see that on both sides.
Donald Trump was willing to have his vice president, because his vice president didn't have the power to do what he wanted him to do. He was willing to let all these things happen with our Capitol. If the Capitol's not sacred, then it ain't sacred now. And it never has been, and never will be.
Is what I'm saying. I'm not advocating for anything. I'm not advocating for the overthrow of the government. However,
they should have shredded them. And the problem with that is the law enforcement was scared to shoot, scared to kill. But their duty was to kill anybody
our government
who reached that Capitol, and they didn't do it.
Our government
so
is
there's
bloated.
A lot of things that went wrong
it's
in that corrupt. Situation.
Our government is bloated. It's corrupt on both sides. They make millions instead of they stay in office.
But every last one of them are liars, not just one side.
They're all liars. They're all fucking crooks. There might be one or two that go in there with that doe-eyed, oh, I can change things.
Honestly, I shouldn't have said that. There are plenty of politicians that are actually there for the good. That's true. That's the truth.
Bloated and it needs
There's
to change.
Some of them are they actually there for the right thing. But
what is the state in our Constitution?
No, but I think he's right, honey. No.
When a government becomes too big and too powerful, mm-hmm. what does it say that we should do as a people?
No, we should not develop a militia and overthrow the government. No, that's not what it says. We should not take up arms. You know, but who's the judge of that? Us? The same people that's doing it? Yeah, yeah. But we're the same people that's doing it.
They are our servants. They're supposed to be our servants, and they're not. Right now, we are their servants.
You can't say that now. They're supposed to be always been our servants. They're making $194,000 a year.
Yeah, our
minimum. Okay.
Right.
That's without lobbyist money.
Minimum. And yeah. when, if they yes, were our servants, lobbyist money, right. Why are they telling us to lock the fuck down? Why are they putting, you know, National Guard in our streets, telling us to go back inside, go home?
Mr. Because it's safe.
May I ask you questions? I really want to know this.
But who's safe for who?
Where were you at when the lockdown happened? Where were you living? Were you in a big city or were you in a small town? Like, where were you at when the lockdown was officially announced in March of 2020?
Which lockdown? For COVID?
Good answer. Good answer. No, I'm curious, like, when the country was first locked down, first of all, it was 2 weeks the first time. Like, were you in a major city or were you in a smaller town?
I don't understand. I don't remember a lockdown. What are you talking about, lockdown?
When COVID lockdown happened.
Oh, COVID.
In 2020.
COVID. Yeah, where were you at when the lockdown happened, the national lockdown?
In what city was I in? Yes. Lexington, Tennessee.
Okay. So were you in a big city?
No.
So you know, like you felt those effects, like
I have OCD. I'm a hypochondriac, so I fear infections. I fear disease. So I'm a little bit different. You know, I can get sick. If one of you is sick on the podcast, it's possible for me to get sick.
Shoot.
Oh, what?
Oh, shit. Shoot.
No. You're the only reason I wasn't asking that to be facetious. I was asking that because I have learned living up here, when we have talked to, we know a local politician in our area who is currently running as a representative for the state. Mm-hmm. And when we told him our story of what we went through in the lockdown of the National Guard being in our streets, you better be inside by 8 p.m. He was like, are you serious? Like, there is a lot of the country that doesn't know what people went through.
No, you're right. Because I promise you, I never heard. That didn't happen to us. We never got a message. We never got on the news. We never got anything that says you can't come outside. Now, it was restrictions, of course, because 6 feet apart, all those things, but being confined at the time, I worked for the state of Tennessee. And so even working for the state of Tennessee, we were still going out and we were still doing our thing. We were not restricted. And so, but there were precautions put in place, but I never heard about the National Guard imposing.
I saw them.
We were told that we had to be by 8 p.m. and the National Guard said, barricade your doors because there was a protest happening at the mall right near us and we had to be inside by 8 p.m. And the governor said, if you
because
are out past curfew, we will pull you over and fine you.
Like, because of COVID?
A glimpse. We really because were living of COVID, for vendetta.
Yeah, because of COVID. That crazy. and then in the middle of that, they had in Phoenix and Scottsdale, we were living in Scottsdale at that point. They had the Black Lives Matter protesters. But they weren't protesting. I don't even think they were really Black Lives Matter. They were just out there rioting and breaking into people's homes in Scottsdale. And they were a block away. We could hear it.
Yep.
And we were already locked down. Like, we had to be locked down.
He literally slept with a weapon by under his pillow. Like, we had to, he was down.
That's a little bit different. And
it's a mix of both.
Yeah, but when there's a protest, when there's violence, I mean, are you saying that you don't wish the National Guard was there?
No,
I don't want the National Guard in my fucking streets. Fuck you.
His ideology of government is
not you. Alone. Government, not you.
No, I'm good. So, but you didn't want. So was the issue the protesters or the National Guard?
No, I'm just saying that to have lived.
It was two different things.
To have lived through something where there are National Guard in your streets and you have to barricade your doors. And I hadn't even had a child at this point, but we did have his two kids and my inherited kids in our home. And it was like, we didn't know what to say to them, how to prepare them for this. Like, we saw like the government control happening before our eyes. Like it was.
Yeah,
Honestly, I had thought about starting like some sort of like online support group, or not like support group, but like, tell me about your experience where you were in the country at the time of this lockdown, because it varies so much. The problem is that aftermath of that lockdown has affected people in so many different ways. Up here in Montana, it didn't touch them. Yeah, the schools were like, we'll be cautious about it, but like our kids lost two full years of school. And they
this was after some of the shootings, correct?
What shootings?
Well, there were protests in response to shootings.
The protest. It's the COVID lockdown that.
Yeah, I don't recall in the state of Tennessee. I don't recall back then there being a lockdown involving any National Guard. There were kids that they couldn't go to school, right?
Yeah, our kids couldn't go to school. And it was pretty gnarly. It was scary. So when the lockdown first happened, and this is what makes me hate the government and why I'm just like, I just stay like, that's why we moved up here. But when the lockdown first happened and they had the National Guard, they activated the National Guard in Arizona, and I saw convoys in our streets. Convoys.
I never knew about that. The only time I've seen National Guard is when there were protests that were out of control, which most of them are anyway. I saw that and I thought it was necessary for the National Guard to be there. But as far as the lockdown from COVID, I guess because I wasn't locked down, my city wasn't locked down. I don't believe my state was locked down. It was different for us. And I don't know why it would be different for us and not for y'all, but if you guys got the National Guard marching in your streets to be in some type of order for COVID, that's weird, because I don't think the whole country went through that. And I think it's a big secret. I think it's a big secret that it's a secret that I had never heard about. So
that's why I want to have this group. Like, what did you go through? Because all of our experiences are so radically different.
Yeah.
And being up here gave me that perspective. Like, oh, you don't. Yeah. Like, we literally had like National Guard in our streets. Like, that's why I want to have like a group. Like, when we talk about what the experience was, because let us tell you, like, I've never had.
Are y'all being serious right now? You're saying that the National Guard held like curfews.
8 p.m. We had to be inside of our doors by 8 p.m. and we had to barricade our doors because of the protests happening. We were in a part of the city where we happened to be involved in it.
That was a little bit separate. Like, so when the first one, it's mixed of the two. So the first half with the National Guard was the lockdown of during COVID. And I saw it with my own eyes. I was on the building just watching in our streets. And then when we moved from down, because I was living in downtown Phoenix when that first happened. And then when I had to get out because that a moratorium on evictions or whatever. Didn't happen.
I was evicted twice.
Yeah, we had to leave. So I'm like, well, where do I go? And so we got a place in Scottsdale, a little townhouse in Scottsdale. And then at that point, then the riots started to happen, or the protests started to happen. And so then we were locked down there on top of what it already technically was. But it was a little bit different than it was in downtown Phoenix.
Yeah.
But downtown Phoenix was a lot more tight. Scottsdale, because there was more rich people, it was a little bit laxed. as far as the lockdown was concerned until the riots began. And then it was, you know, you have to barricade your doors. And we, I mean, like she said, you know, they were just a block away from us, you know, trying to break into people's houses and all this other garbage. And so I literally had to push our couch to the doors and sat there with my sidearm all night. Mm-hmm. But you know, just to make sure it wasn't going to happen. Luckily, nothing ever came to our townhouse. No, but no, so it's two issues.
Well, here's the thing. I'm with you. If whether it's a protest gone awry has turned to a riot, or whether it's COVID, I'm still a grown man. Okay, I'm still a grown man, and I make decisions for my family, for my house. Period. You don't get to tell me I need to stay in my house. Now, if there, you know, people out on the street shooting and stuff like that, I get it. Or if there's somebody that's escaped and you know, that's dangerous or whatever, I get it. But because of protests, people are being, now there were curfews put on protests. I thought those curfews were for the protesters. But you're saying it was for everyone.
It was for the people and their homes to go home and barricade themselves in their home. If we were found to be out past 8 p.m., they will pull you over. You better explain why you're out. And if you are out without being essential personnel, you would be fined or arrested.
Right. And then on top of that, I'm immunocompromised. Mm-hmm. And so I have to take medication. I have to go and get blood work done regularly. And I used the VA when I was there. Now everybody knows the VA sucks, but it does some good. But the Phoenix VA was one of the top whistleblowers back in 2015 or whatever it was. I had to go to the VA for a doctor's appointment, when I came up to the VA, I had guys who were like retired military. They were like old guys, probably, you know, Vietnam vets or whatever, standing there, air fucking cops, going like, "What's your business here?" Like, "What do you mean, what's my business? My business is my business." "Well, why are you here?" Like, I'm here. Why the fuck do you think I'm here? I'm here for a doctor's appointment.
And yeah, I mean, you served in the military.
Yeah, I was in the Marine Corps and I was in the Army after that. I was in the Army after that. I walked right up and I was like, and you know, they're like, "Well, you need to tell us why you're here." I mean, "No, I fucking don't." And they're like, "Well, what business do you have?" I said, "None of yours, sir." And they're like, "We're going to call the cops." I said, "Please call the cops. I don't have to tell you why I'm here."
So you don't like being controlled by the government. I don't think anybody does.
This man is going to, period.
Which is why I'm okay with, I had to come to terms with where I work, but I don't necessarily work for the government. It's just one of our, it's a necessary evil, I guess. It's our customer, but I hate the government. I hate the government. Especially during COVID. I mean, that was horrible.
I don't think you'll find a lot of people who actually do like the government. Okay. We know there's waste. We know there's corruption.
You hit the nail on the head. None of this matters. None of this matters who becomes president. What matters is what we can actually affect change at still with this system that has become bloated and corrupt is your local elections. Who are your state representatives?
Yep.
Who are we?
We will survive every president.
For us.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter who is president.
We'll survive.
If they figured out some way to resurrect Walt cryogenically frozen corpse and made him president.
That'd be interesting.
It does. I know that'd be so cool.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter who is president. It matters who is in your local government. Period.
Good.
That's
because it's going to be your governor that's going to enact the National Guard, right? It's going to be your legislators who go to Congress about your infrastructure, your roads, your bridges, and everything else. And it's going to be those individuals that you hear the most from. That impact, here's my thing. The reason why I have an issue with the government is because I think we've elected about 535 lazy ass people that make a lot of money from us, plus the money they get from special interest, okay? $194,000 a year, I should say, okay, How are you spending my money? You sitting over at the golf course, you sitting over here lying, you sitting over here bullshitting. No, you need to be working 40 hours a week, just like everybody else, or get the hell out of the position. That's what I feel. That's what I believe. I believe we should have a say-so over the people that we employ.
Yeah. I think they should be salaried employees and give them one income, and you have to feel what it's like to be a salaried employee and be expected to work more hours.
They are salaried. They are salaried. They get $194,000 a year, but I don't think they should be hourly, because I think they should account for every single hour. 40 hours a week, brother. You're right. 160 hours a month, brother. In the office, yeah. Not sitting around. They say, well, they could be playing golf and making deals. Get over that bullshit. Okay, I need you working.
Like a blue collar worker. I like your style. That's what they should be doing. 100%.
Yes, I got to talk. That's what my podcast was originally supposed to be about. It was supposed to be about holding politicians accountable, asking for report cards, asking for time cards, them punching a clock and being accountable for what they're supposed to be doing for the money they receive. Period.
100%.
Yeah. And right now, I mean, with the lobbyists and the insider trading that goes on, I mean, the things that they do, we would get thrown in prison for.
I think that. Well, you hit it on the head. There are things that a lot of people do that if we did it, we would be sitting behind bars. We can look at the people in jail right now. You know, what if we did half of the things these people do, we'd be fired. You know, we can't say, well, wait a minute, you didn't come to work today. Oh, I was playing pool all day, but we were talking business. That's bullshit. That's bullshit. I understand you want to play golf. Play golf when you're off on Saturday and Sunday like everybody else, but not during the week. I'm sorry. I don't think I'm down for that deal, because I don't think that's the only deal you're making.
Right.
Exactly. We were a government made of the people, by the people, for the people, but nobody gives a shit about the people. They give a shit about the dollar, the almighty dollar. And
let me ask you a question. How many hours on average do you think politicians actually work
office for their constituents? Less than 20,
probably. Yeah.
Less than 20.
I would say less than 5.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, probably.
I love that. I think they're not working for the people. They're working for their lobbyists,
for themselves. They're
the dollar.
They're trying to pad in their pockets. Look, they make $194,000 a year on our money. And then they enrich themselves with special interests, the lobbyists, and everyone else. And I think there should be full accountability for that. I don't think it's fair. I think if you take that job, that's the only money you should be able to make for the entire time. They'll get your ass out of that job. I guarantee you that. But you should not make one more penny than the $194,000 that we're paying you.
Agreed.
We'd have some decent people.
I think that a salary of a congressperson should be the median salary of their constituents.
Hey.
I think that if you are a North Dakota governor.
Hey, back in the day, pastors used to have jobs, right? They didn't always get paid by the church. You know, they had a job.
Politicians used to have jobs. Like the politicians would leave their jobs. They would go to Congress. They would meet. They would have their little meetings and stuff. And then they would go back to their jobs.
Congress
was always work.
Side hustle. That's what nobody remembers. Congress was supposed to be your side hustle. That was a job you did for your community, for your country, but you still went back to your job. Now, no,
we were better off.
Yeah, of course.
We were better off then. Yeah. Yeah. That's what we should go. Listen, someone told me, I was telling them this. I said, listen, I want accountability. I want time cards. They said, Paris, you know, sometimes they're on the golf course, you know, they're striking up deals, and some people don't think that's work. I said, it's not work. If you mean to tell me you got to go golfing with somebody? That's bullshit.
Yeah, it's bullshit.
Yeah,
I agree.
I mean, if you look at it that way, then P. Diddy was working when he was whooping Cassie's ass. I mean, I'm just saying.
I'm sure he was getting paid by every punch for what he laid in there. He was making money.
Yeah, I mean, that's bullshit. I mean, that's just the way I feel. I think that you should have to prove that you work, just like we do.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I punch a clock. I have my trading company, but what I do for salary, I punch a clock, and it takes my time, and it clocks my time, And so I think that they should have to punch a clock and have to prove that they're working. They don't get to go and play and drink bourbon and get paid by us at the same time. I don't think that's fair. Agreed. I don't think it's fair. If you want to make money from lobbyists, you're going to have to quit being a politician and you're going to have to go work for the lobbyists.
They see their mid-year and their end-of-year review. I want to be able, as a citizen, to be able to see their end-year and mid-year review, because that's what I'm doing with my job.
I want to see your time card for every month. I'll do it for my state. Every month, send me all their time cards. I'll go through them and say, nope, you wasn't working. Nope, you wasn't working. Well, guess what? You get a check for 3 hours this week. Because you think they're getting up at 8 in the morning? Hell no. They're not getting up at 8 in the morning. You think they're taking a one-hour lunch? Hell no.
I mean, look at Paul. I mean, the machine grinds them all up. I mean, look at Dan Crenshaw, for crying out loud. Like when he first got into office, at first he was like an up-and-coming star. And I was like, this guy, like, war vet, has an eye patch, like this motherfucker needs to run for president, right? Like who wouldn't vote for a war hero with an eye patch, right? Like,
I'd vote for him.
Like this dude, like, and he's awesome. And Tim Scott, fuck, like I watch his videos all the time. Who's the West Point graduate? What's his name? That's not Tim Scott. It's do you know what I'm talking about? He comes from a family of slaves, and he has worked his way up where all his siblings, they all went to West Point. God, what is his name? I watch his stuff all the time. Brilliant. But these two guys, I'm like, those two would be a hard hitting pair at first. But then now Dan Crenshaw is kind of like, nice, you know.
Then they drank the Kool-Aid.
Money. It's
Tom Morrell.
Tom Morrell. Get rid of the Tom name.
Yes, sir.
I don't know if I think he's a senator. I don't think he's a congressman. Anyway, amazing.
You will agree though that there are some politicians that have stayed straight and narrow. I don't think 100% of them are. I think there are some that are in it for. Don't ask me to name them because I can't name any. But I think there are some that that have good intentions, and for the most part, do the right thing. I think the majority of them, however, there's a problem.
Yeah.
I think some of them just like to argue and get paid.
And you've got those. Yeah, no, I agree. But those are the ones that are the quiet ones, silent ones. I was in Bakersfield for a long time. Three of my four kids were born in Bakersfield. And Bakersfield is where Kevin McCarthy came from. Everybody knows Kevin McCarthy now. But when he was first up and coming, I actually met with him. I actually did a lot of singing events for his stuff. I wasn't like part of any political rally or anything. I just happened to be asked by certain people to come in and sing the national anthem or whatever for whatever rally or whatever it was. And I got to meet him. I got to have dinner with him. And at the time, he was a really nice guy. And then he hit D.C., when he finally went over into DC, and this was he's this rising star of the Republican Party, and I'm watching him like, that's not the same guy I met. That's not the same guy that I sat down with.
But he's not the worst guy.
No, he's not. No, he's not.
Okay. There's plenty of them that are worse than him. And listen, we have to talk about something positive before we end this show today. So let's ask the missus, what is it about this country that makes you smile?
That's a sweet question.
Oh my gosh. There's a lot about this country that makes me smile.
Our illusion of freedom.
That's why I asked her, not you.
No, this country is the greatest country that has ever been. I really believe that. Like, I do believe that in my heart. Like, I just, what we have been able
to. If you don't think so, Cannon, then you need to go to the one you think that is, because this is the best country that's ever been. But go ahead, ma'am.
I agree.
We built something here that has, it's changed in the past decade. It has. Because that's a product of a system that most people can't even touch or understand. But I don't know if we've even said this, but my husband and I have families that are immigrants, not talking illegal immigrants or whatever. Like, I have traced my lineage from Belfast, Ireland, with my great, great grandpa coming here as an illegitimate child, and his aunt and his mom took him here. And I saw Ellis Island and what they went through. We built something incredible. We built something incredible. I can't imagine being an immigrant and seeing the Statue of Liberty for the first time. And what that means, like, we have the right to have this podcast and this discussion between two people. And guess what we can do? We can disagree gracefully.
And say anything we want to, but if we was in Russia, we'd be getting our heads cut off.
Exactly. That's what breaks my heart. Anyone that says, I will move, and I cannot, if this guy is elected, I will move. Well, you're still here. Like,
go ahead.
We have the right to have an opinion.
Yeah.
And we just need to learn as a culture now to be able to respectfully and gracefully disagree. Yeah. We are allowed to worship any deity. We are allowed to pursue any vocation. We are allowed to pursue creativity. We can make music. We can make art. We can do all the things. We can do anything we want. We are allowed to expand the human mind beyond the ways that we thought possible. This country is not just great, it's phenomenal. If you are someone that was born in a rural tribe in Australia as an aboriginal like descendant, or if you are born into a country where you are given an assault weapon at 11 years old and told to go for my God, like, we don't know how good we have it. We have it so good. I can go inside right now and relish my home and my husband and my child. We are allowed to realize the beauty that this life has to offer us. That's what this country gives us. We are given life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Mm-hmm. That is powerful and lovely. It allows us to become better as a society and a culture. That is phenomenal. That is absolutely phenomenal. We can get on this podcast and disagree and just
and still have a good
discussion
time.
And now we get to take my husband inside.
Well,
That's beautiful.
So, Mr. Cannon, do you have anything great to say about this wonderful country? Now, I got a better question for you. Tell me something, this is going to be hard. Tell me something good about the government.
I'll start off by saying that I don't hate this country. I love this country. I fucking won the lottery by being born here. You know what I mean? Like, that's I think anyone born in the United States, you won the lottery, really. She's absolutely right. I can't say it as eloquently as she can. What the government does now, there are some good, I guess. I just want to be left alone, honestly. Like, I'm tired of politicians promising me things. I don't want promises. I don't care about promise me to leave me the fuck alone and let me live my life and let me be an adult. Let me be I'm an adult. I'm a human being. I'm an adult. I make mistakes. Let me learn from them. Right. And that's how we learn as humans, is to make mistakes. The government now is so big, it's like you sneeze and it's like, oh my God, now you have to, I'm going to fine you because you weren't wearing a mask. I know that's not a real, I'm just bullshitting. I'm just saying.
I know one.
That
WIC is a great thing.
WIC?
WIC is a great thing.
It is a great thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. WIC was great.
Let me say this, Mr. Cannon, and we'll wrap this up. I think the government, I think a good part of the government is the fact that you were able to serve in the United States military, serve alongside your brothers. You were able to serve in the U.S. Army, and then you were able to give your gifts to where you work now, because I've been there and I've seen how people admire you, how they respect you. Even though you may be a person that can impede upon their rights, and you don't. And so what's good about the government is that they didn't mess you completely up. And there are fruits from your experiences that the people that you're around, even your colleagues, that they benefit from, I benefit from. So I'm grateful for your experience and your opportunities with the government. Absolutely. And with that, it's a wrap. Thank you for coming to joining us on the DP. This is an awesome show. This is awesome. Thank you for joining us. We're going to do this again. And you know what we're going to do? You know what we're going to do? We're going to have a topic on those people who did experience those lockdowns, who did experience that a period of oppression by perhaps the National Guard, even by law enforcement. We want to look into that and talk about that. And we want to talk about maybe each of us will talk to some folks and bring back some of their experiences, how they felt during those particular times, because I was totally ignorant to that. So thank you for joining us for DPS on the record. Hannon, I'm going to call you in about 3 minutes and talk to you for a second. You're in the white. So thank you for joining us. We'll see you next time on DPS on the record.
Bye, everybody. Thanks for having us. How do I shut this off?
You're still on air.